People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Brandon Thurston from Wrestlenomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone.
But we can't ignore the math, okay? We can't ignore the data.
Go on Google Trends, type in your name, then type in mine. You're a straight line. I'm a pyramid.
I like the very direct question on that.
Television ratings, downward spiral. Buy rates plummeting.
The time is now to turn the math around.
It is time for Pollock and Thurston coming at you here on this Wednesday, just hours removed from the first and maybe only presidential debate involving Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. Will a rematch be held? Donald Trump has stated. Must be on Fox News. Must
Did
have.
He say that?
This he has stated he will do one if it's on Fox News with Sean Hannity or Laura Ingraham as the moderator. So he is basically stating, no, I've had enough after 90 minutes. But anyway, I know Brandon, politics is your pause from drama and insanity, but I mean, what I
so
just
keep
watched,
wrestling out of it. Okay.
Yeah. Let's try. No comment yet from Hulk Hogan. No reaction. If, Donald Trump is still his hero.
I will say there were rules. There was a graphic on, I think I was watching it on CBS at first, and they showed a graphic of all the list of rules. And when things like that go on the screen, I announce in the living room, the rules are simple. And then they went to the next graphic, which was, Donald Trump has won a virtual coin toss already. So he gets the pick of, as if it was a War Games match. So that was amusing to me.
Yeah. Per the Trump request, the mics had to be muted, and therefore, Trump just got to go on and on. And, I feel we're already diving into too much political discussion here, but you know what, folks, this is important. But if this 90 minutes is going to be encapsulated by one statement, we all know what is going to be the defining meme of this election cycle.
They're eating the dogs.
I didn't know you had that ready too. You played a different one for me off air.
I strategized what I released to you, but it was quite the debate on Tuesday.
Well, you've got to reach out to the dog demographic, and he's just appealing to the dog vote and the cat vote as well, eating the cats as well as part of that.
That's right. What was more significant, the performance or the post debate endorsement from one Taylor Swift? That is to her 250 million Instagram followers, that encouraging them to sign up and vote, and who she will be voting for. What's going to get more of a bump? I go with Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift or what?
Or the actual performance at the debate.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's now we're getting into political analysis here. The consensus seems to be that Harris pretty decisively won the debate. I would say, you know, it's similar. Just by the margin or the degree to which I sense that people are saying that she won the debate.
Yes. Yeah. There's, the real enemy, has become ABC, the moderators. How dare they? How dare
they? It's the referees, you know.
Yeah, that's it. All right. That's all the political discussion we will allow, because we know there are folks out there who, how dare you? How dare you talk about the sacred institution of politics in the United States? You Canadian, what do you know? What do you know about my country?
That's right.
I'll step back. All right. We have lots to cover on today's show. No guests today because we have a handful of topics. Not to say that outreach was not made, but I feel yes. Some people are, you know, I don't know. It's the Pollock and Thurston curse. Some people are just they don't want to come into our wonderful YouTube StreamYard room.
Yes. Well, we made several attempts, and maybe it was short notice as well.
That is true. We have been leaving these to the last minute, but that's because every single week I'm awaiting for this red zone into the 1 yard line to a 90% chance over the next month to
yes.
hit 100% to become the touchdown. And I just feel in my bones, it's going to be on a Wednesday at noon Eastern that announcement is made and we have to be ready to
legal
detonate.
Stories that we may be anticipating could drop at some time in the future. Waiting for that as well.
Yeah. And we've got the exclusive machine here on the right hand of the screen, because Brandon Thurston, fast and furious over the last week, reporting on everything from
oh yes,
what's happening with the American Nightmare trademark to
yes.
An early glimpse at what can happen in the Mr. McMahon series. And I don't know if he's going to have a lifetime Netflix subscription as a result of his reporting. And
probably not.
Dr. Carlin Kolker, maybe we'll get into him a little later on in the show as well. I know Brandon has been doing some digging into the Kevin Kelly Tate Twins lawsuit. So we'll have some new details just about some details in regards to the suit and some of the topics at hand when that moves forward. But we have to start with the biggest news of the year, and that is WWE announcing in this era of more is more, not less is more, that Raw is going to be condensed by 1 hour for the final 13 weeks of the year, beginning October the 7th. This is when the short-term extension with USA goes into effect. And for the final 13 weeks of the year, you can tune in at 8 Eastern on the USA Network, and they will have you out of there by 10.
Yes.
Glorious news to my eyes, to my ears. I'm still on cloud 9 that we are getting 2 hours of Raw for at least 13 weeks before the move to Netflix. And then God knows what the runtime of this show is going to be. What is the commercial inventory going to be on Netflix? Could we have more Raw than ever come January? I'm not thinking about January. I'm thinking about October 7th till December 30th, and I will be very happy to have 1 hour of my week given back to me.
A slight reduction on the deathbed hours of Raw that you're going to reflect on later in life, I think. But just 3 months, and there's no clear sense of what the length of this show is going to be on Netflix. I suppose, if nothing else, intentions aside, you'll have 3 months in the past year to look back on to say, how did this work out? What were the pluses and minuses of this? In the short term, it's certainly a positive PR story for them, because what's been one of the biggest complaints about WWE programming over the last more than 10 years is the gargantuan length of Monday Night Raw. It, as you kind of alluded to, in Netflix, there's no time limit. There's no other programming that they're you know, having to worry about. There's nothing that's weekly and live on Netflix. Raw will be the first thing.
When you think about your entertainment options, and not to say that Raw is an anomaly, but how many announcements are made of something being shorter that presents such a unanimous positivity? Like if I were to tell you
baseball, Major League Baseball,
baseball immediately came to mind. The pitch clock was wholly accepted largely by people, a little bit of a aggravation from purists, but
yes,
that is a good example. But if I were to tell you that, you know, the upcoming Marvel film, it's only going to be 90 minutes, or this upcoming memoir, it's only going to be 150 pages. I mean, I could go down all these lists of entertainment, and usually that would not be met with such amazing positivity as this Raw being reduced to 2 hours is. But what do you see as the short-term positives for this move to 2 hours in a period where they are going against Monday Night Football? Like, this should artificially enhance the Raw audience right from the get-go by, yeah, you know, 5%, even if that's a small increase. It's an increase nonetheless in theory.
But that doesn't, that's just a mathematical result that maybe you can spin into more good media for Raw. That's going to mess up a lot of my comparisons, right? Like, I'm going to be comparing Q4's average to last year's Q4 that's going to have a third hour in it, which, if people don't know, the third hour is almost always the least watched hour and often by a large margin.
Which this Monday, it was one of the lowest hours in Raw's history for hour three. I think it was maybe the third lowest in its history on USA.
Yeah. So that's really going to mess up my world a bit, but it'll be good for fans, I guess. But again, it's, you know, it's not necessarily, going to help, I don't know, WWE in a deeper or real way. But it might allow USA Network to put something on at 10 o'clock if they want to use that lead in. It's better to have a lead in from Raw at 10 than at 11 later in the night. So maybe if they want to promote some new programs at 10 o'clock, they could do that. But it's just, you know, it's less, and same thing goes for if it's less than 3 hours on Netflix, it's less time to sell ad units and therefore fewer ad units that they can sell, and it's harder to monetize. So there will be, I suppose, an incentive for it to be around 3 hours when it goes to Netflix, or maybe as people have, you know, speculated, it could be very flexible. It could be a different length. Could be 2 hours 1 week, could be 3.5 hours another week.
The only indication we have had so far, came from a report from Dave Meltzer that this was a USA Network call. What would be the rationale for USA to be, they are getting Raw for a fraction of the cost.
$25 million for this.
$25 million over 13 weeks, which is a dramatic savings of what they are spending per week on Raw. Like, we're talking a shift from like $5.1 million per week to $1.9 million per week for an episode of Raw.
Yeah, but I did the math on like a per quarter basis. This is by year, this is $265 million. By quarter, that's like $66 million. And this is $25 million. So a great discount, more than 50% off.
So what would be the reason in your mind why USA would want less inventory of Raw? Do you think it comes down to how can we best introduce a new program at 10? Do they feel that against Monday Night Football, this will enhance this audience for 13 weeks? Like, I see WWE having a lot of reason to try this out, and especially are being paid less. I don't see it as clearly from the USA side to want less programming.
I guess it has to be some kind of marketing value, which is, I think it would be encompassed in the lead-in value, right? I think we were talking about this last week. You know, how do you make money from wrestling TV programs, ad revenue? Maybe it's carriage fees, but it's also the opportunity to cross promote and put, what was that show where the rich guy and he got arrested and he lives with his rich family that's on USA Network. And sometimes he appears in the crowd. He appeared on the crowd.
Crizzly Knows Best.
Crizzly Knows Best is where I'm trying to get. And you can put those people in your crowd and promote the USA Network show. I guess it has to be a marketing value. And you think about, you know, it's the third hour, so it's the weakest hour. And you look at, you know, wasn't it just this past Monday that the first hour was ad free, which tells me, well, maybe it's not the most valuable ad space. I mean, I'm sure it's doing better than the run of the mill Law and Order, but maybe it's not so valuable that they can't, you know, leave it out, for a week every now and then for 1 hour.
We also have last year, because of the ongoing strike, we had Monday Night Football simulcast every week on ABC and ESPN. This year, it's only going to be select games, so there should be less football viewership to contend with on most Mondays. Plus, you're eliminating this third hour of Raw. So in theory, they're basically telling you your year-to-year comparisons, Brandon, are going to be blowing up or require multiple asterisks.
They'll be really positive. But they're already positive. Last I was looking at it, because we have a Raw report from this past Monday where they did a pretty low number against the first week of Monday Night Football. But nonetheless, if you look at the year-over-year differences, Raw is up in the demo in this quarter to date 10% and is up 3% in total viewership. So it's already positive. You know, it'll be a misleadingly positive number in Q4, I suppose. But it's not like Raw is not doing well in ratings. It is.
What was your – I mean, I'm really dating ourselves going back to – May of 2012, when this announcement was made of the permanent move to 3 hours of Raw, in your developing WrestleNomics theories, did you have one for the move to 3 hours?
No, I was not engaged with this material very much in 2012. I was wrestling, but I wasn't like, I didn't live in a home with cable or any surrogate to it. Yeah.
So you've gone back. You've become a cable subscriber during this.
I've become a Sling subscriber. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Cause you're a cord, adapter.
Cord never. Yeah. Yeah. I'm really a, yeah. What do you, a convert? I was a never and now I'm I do have the cord. I don't know what now would work best there. A cord returner. Yeah. Connector. That sounds good.
Well, I dreaded this news, and suffice to say, my theories were met and then some over the next 12 years/633 weeks that we have been going with 3 hours of Raw.
Yes.
What could I have done with those 633 hours over the last 12 and a half years?
Well, I hope you've reduced that somewhat by starting late and skipping the commercials, right? How many hours?
This has been, as of this past Monday, 633 weeks of 3 hour Raws. And we'll get another three after this.
You could have written a book. You could have watched All Japan in the 90s during that time.
There's a lot I could have done. I'm sure there will be a day when I'm on my deathbed and I'm going to think of 633 hours much more. I'll judge them with much more scrutiny. We have a super chat here from our good friend Jumanji Hunter. Is a short-term move to 2 hours wise because it will break habits set by your base audience set in stone for years and then to potentially go back. So the idea of they get people into a false sense of security. Getting in and out in 2 hours and then comes Netflix. Do you foresee any pattern switches? It was the opposite effect when they moved to three because Raw was a 9 to 11 PM program and it was getting people into the habit of tuning in that extra hour early and over time.
The third hour didn't start performing as low as it ended up performing
until for years now. It's been hour one has been the strong hour. It's the drop off is hour three, but there was a time, folks, when the big segment was the final segment of the show. And now it's routinely the lowest.
I guess. What the question is getting at is like, you're telling people, you don't have to stick around from 10 to 11. And then when they go to Netflix and perhaps are in the 10 to 11 slot, that's going to make that viewership even harder to retain in that third hour. Huh. If you explain it like that, that's a possibility. But then again, I don't know that Netflix needs it to be, 3 hours.
I think they're going to put so much into the move to Netflix. You already have an audience that I think number one, it's a hot product trumps everything. If you, like that is going to allow an audience to be engaged at a high level. I think there's the curiosity of going to Netflix. They're going to put so much into those first few weeks on Netflix.
Cena will be there. I have a feeling maybe Dwayne will come back.
Oh, you're going to have a segment of the audience that's going to be expecting like it's going to be TV mature when they go to Netflix. I'm sure
that's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen, but boy, I can't wait for the anticipation from some on what you're going to get. And I really don't foresee it being a big issue. Like they're going to put so much into that debut on Netflix and are going to be loading the deck as such. And this coincides this week. We get the move of SmackDown back to the USA Network in a 2 hour format and. Yes. NXT weeks away from making the move to CW.
And maybe a factor here is in this third quarter. Well, no, that's not true. It's only these 2 weeks, right, where they have all three shows before NXT goes to CW on October 1st. It's only these few, maybe it's 3 weeks, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So I was almost thinking, well, maybe that's a factor. And maybe that's a factor. You're carrying both Raw and SmackDown. Maybe you don't need extra inventory for WWE to sell in that time. It's the marketing value outweighs the value of having an additional hour of Raw to sell ads against.
In this 5 year cycle, do you see SmackDown staying in this 2 hour format throughout these 5 years? Does NBC Universal kick the tires and state, yeah, man, we really miss these 3 hour.
I understand
marathons.
It's going to be 3 hours for the debut. Is that right?
For the debut?
We'll look at the USA schedule here because we'll be able to see it coming up, right? I saw somebody post a graphic. Maybe I was fooled by a meme.
I did see that thing you're checking, and I went to the schedule this week, and it was listed 8 till 10 for this Friday.
Okay.
I'm definitely not ready for a 3-hour show on Friday night.
Okay.
Nor was the AEW audience ready for a 3-hour AEW block on Friday night.
What do we have here? Friday. It's going to be on SmackDown this coming Friday, September, whatever, right? And it's, so on September 20th, it is billed for 2 hours. On September, what is it, 13th is the 13th. First week. It is, yeah, it's only billed for 2 hours. So maybe I've been fooled by a meme.
They're not going to go against the CMLL anniversary card with 3 hours. Come on, they got to know what their audience will be tuning into on Friday. All right. I'm sure we will be talking about the big move to 2 hours. The countdown begins now until October the 7th, when they will revert to a 2-hour show. And I am very curious as well, the difference in the structuring of the show, and at least for 3 months. I mean, there's going to be less need for talent on Raw, and probably getting rid a lot of the excess that people complain about on Raw to get it into a tighter window. Like, that's only natural. And what the fan sentiment is to these 2 hours, and what that sentiment will be as we get closer to the end of this experiment. Like, you're dangling something in front of your audience that they've been clamoring for a decade, and it's temporary, as the graphic says, for a while.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we'll see. I think it'll probably be very flexible on Netflix.
All Out went down this past weekend, featuring light tubes, hypodermic needles, cinder blocks, plastic bags, and Tony Khan giddy at the All Out press conference. How would you have felt, Brandon, as someone that has financed his way to many of these AEW shows? Would you have been pro or con, pardon the pun, of such a truncated press conference where this was a very short version and is kind of the reason you attend these press conferences?
Yeah, but I don't care, because I'm not that interested in asking questions to talent. I understand others who are more interested in asking questions to talent were upset and were disappointed that they didn't get any talent press conference appearances.
It was at least a more open Tony Khan, because it feels like this guy is like dancing on the 1 yard line of this television deal, even getting to hammer down a percentage likelihood of an announcement coming over the next month that he has pegged at 90%. And it would seem that the question is no longer, you know, will they be staying with WBD? It is, will this include any other suitors? What will the programming slate be? And a huge one is the pay-per-view component of all of this.
He was seen in Chicago mouthing what appeared to be the word Max, probably not a reference to Maxwell Jacob Friedman, but maybe the streaming service.
This is like Brett at the end of the Survivor Series, just like,
yes.
How will that affect? Well, we'll be on Canada. Will just be tied to Triller forever, which I have no complaints about. Triller is usually pretty reliable. But yeah, do we have much to state about this? I feel every week it's talking about, well, he said this word and he used this percentage, and we're just kind of running in place until this announcement is finally made.
And there is a trademark that has got people a buzz, AEW Shockwave.
Which he confirmed the reason for. They're about to send a shockwave to the industry. Got it.
Yeah. I think we can put this on the screen here. I don't think there's anything sensitive here. There is AEW Shockwave here. It's just a trademark that they have applied for. And yeah, we'll. So maybe it's a new show, and
is Shockwave Magazine going to have an issue with this on that graphic that you just pulled up? Are there any punk rock bands out there that might be contesting this?
Well, I think it's important that they have trademarked AEW Shockwave. They have not tried to trademark Shockwave. And it's probably, there probably isn't the proneness to confusion like there is for a rock band or a wrestler who are both selling merchandise and t-shirts and things like that. But maybe that's a new TV show. Maybe it's something for WBD. Maybe it's something for Max. Others have speculated maybe it's something for a different media distributor. And the most likely seem to be Fox, maybe Amazon. But people seem to have the idea that maybe this is a Fox show. It could be FS1. That might make sense. Another TV show. That's what we need.
I was just stating the other day, we don't have enough. We don't have enough. It's just every night of the week currently dedicated to wrestling. I think we could work some afternoons in there every now and then. So, that's the latest on the AEW deal. Stay tuned. There will be an announcement coming soon, we hope.
Yes.
Let's talk a bit about the, let's move on to the Kevin Kelly Tate Twins lawsuit. We went through a lot of this last week, and I think that there was like there was a decent amount of discussion about this. Stephen New did an interview on the House of Kayfabe YouTube channel, yes. I believe is the name of it. So that's the only interview I've seen from Stephen New thus far. You have been in contact with Stephen New, and yes, you have gotten and you have also spoken to others as well about the details of the suit, because there is a lot attached to this. At the core is, first of all, getting these contracts thrown out, where arbitration is the method to go through here, and first that has to be thrown out so that the Tates and Kevin Kelly can pursue their legal issues, Kevin Kelly with Ian Riccaboni and the Tates with Tony Khan in regards to defamation accusations.
Yeah, as far as like where this goes next, and by the way, we can add that AEW has entered lawyers into the ring. We do have on the docket, AEW has two lawyers. It escapes me what law firm they're from, but they're from their lawyers and who are going to defend them in this case. And they are representing all of the parties, including Riccaboni, even though, you know, Riccaboni is presumably a contractor, and as well as AEW and Tony Khan. So as I was discussing with you earlier this week, I was looking at the complaint again, and just sort of solidifying my analysis of it is that everything else that they allege here, which is defamation, which is they're trying to be declared employees instead of contractors and saying they're misclassified, which seems quite likely valid to me. They're trying to throw away a certain covenant in their contracts, which seems to be non-compete, but it's redacted, so I don't know for sure. They're alleging breach of contract. They're alleging defamation in terms of Ian Riccaboni, you know, going after, you know, saying things about Kevin Kelly and the Sound of Freedom movie and the QAnon connection, and Tony Khan saying that they were unreliable in Philadelphia, which we were present for. All of those allegations, for those to survive, they need to get the first count upheld by the judge, which is that the arbitration clauses of their contracts are invalid. Arbitration, for those at home who may not know, is like a very private lawsuit that usually tends to favor the more powerful party, where there's limited discovery. It could be expensive and prohibitive for the weaker party. In this case, would be the workers, the wrestlers, the talent. And that's apparently a part of these contracts. And this is an issue in the UFC case. This was an issue, in fact, in another of Stephen Pinu's lawsuits, where he was representing Kelly Klein against Ring of Honor, which at that time, was a subsidiary of Sinclair Broadcasting. And there was a motion to compel arbitration, which I expect there will be in this case, which there is, coincidentally, in the Grant versus WE case. There will be a motion to compel, arbitration, because that is something that on its face has been agreed to here. And if arbitration, is approved, then this case kind of goes away. And then we never know what happens here. There will be some sort of resolution, whether it's favorable to the workers or the promotion or not. There will be no legal precedents to reference, because it'll all be secretive and private. And so I was talking to a labor attorney, Lucas Middlebrook, who we've had on as a guest here, and just sort of having a real lawyer helped me understand that. And basically, he agreed that overcoming arbitration will be contingent for the rest of the case to be litigated. And we had some discussion too about the fact that this lawsuit is, I hope this is really into the weeds, right? But the fact that this lawsuit is not a federal lawsuit. This is a Philadelphia County lawsuit. And the fact is that Kevin Kelly and Ian Riccaboni, who are on opposite sides of this lawsuit, they both are residents of Pennsylvania. Now, if something happens later down the road in this case where, let's say, the defamation gets thrown out and Briccoboni is no longer a party to this case, well, then you do have complete diversity. And as everyone knows, complete diversity means that this wouldn't really be suitable for a local court like Philadelphia County Court, and that this may end up being a federal lawsuit, may get its venue moved at that point. But I think, you know, the one thing that Lucas Middlebrook brought up to me is that something that could happen that might be favorable to the plaintiffs in this case is that you could go to the NLRB and say, look, there's an unfair labor practice happening here, which is that these contractors are being misclassified. They are employees because of the preponderance of control that you could claim that AEW holds over them. And if you go to the NLRB and make that charge, this is something that might help them achieve getting the arbitration thrown out, because it might raise a public policy question if the NLRB ruled in their favor. So I did bring that up to Stephen Pinu yesterday, and he said that it is something that they're considering, and it's something that they might do after the election. Presumably, he didn't spell this out, but I assume that if we have a Democratic president next year, that'll probably elongate the window of opportunity where you have a favorable government to favor labor, to favor the worker rather than the business.
And like just going over like the suit here, it just feels like they are tackling a lot here. And I would think the whole issue of whether these performers are misclassified or not, like this could be a several year long process for them just to unravel that before we can even get to the defamation component of this, which again, I'm not a lawyer. I think it's a tall hill for them to climb to prove, especially going over like the comment that is listed in this complaint from Ian Riccoboni is, I don't know. I think that the defamation aspect is a tough one regardless to prove in the U.S. But the misclassification, do you have any idea of, is there any actions that need to be made upon existing AEW talent? Are they automatically attached to this? Is there an opt-in? Do you have any idea about any involvement of talents?
Not really. I don't understand that. And maybe we can have Stephen Pinu on at some point to explain that. But I was interested in the fact that, well, you could, any third party, in fact, could go to the NLRB. So it doesn't have to be the plaintiffs in this case, that anybody could. And I understand something similar has happened with the college athletes in the NCAA concerning NIL. It's not that they themselves raised this issue to the NLRB, but that a third party did. And if the NLRB rules in their favor, that could help if it were ever to happen. It's not getting optimistic, but it could help set the stage for unionization to happen, because to unionize, to get a successful unionization movement happening, you have to be employees, and the NLRB has to recognize you as employees. And if they recognize you as employees as a result of your unfair labor practice charge, well, that's sort of step one out of the way. It wouldn't automatically make wrestlers in AEW or WWE for that matter employees, but it would help set the stage for some sort of change that favors those workers to happen. So yeah.
All right, let's move on to a few other notes here. Brandon, you had several reports on Post Wrestling, no less, over the past week. Let's start off with an early look at what's in the Mr. McMahon Netflix docuseries. So this is the 6-episode series. All 6 episodes will be released on September 25th. And of course, the trailer was released last week. We did discuss this, but you have found additional details about people that have been interviewed, and certainly giving a sense that Janelle Grant is not just going to be some passing subject in these episodes. And it would seem like emphasized in episode 1 and an even further look in episode 6, which sounds like it's going to be the Janelle Grant episode. Although, as we reported, Janelle Grant nor anyone associated with Janelle Grant is interviewed in the piece.
Right. And to be clear, we have not seen the documentary, the docuseries. I understand there may be some people out there who have access to it early. We do not have access to it. We were reporting based on a source who has seen all 6 episodes. So yeah, it's, it, it was described to me as the Grant case and the various allegations and the merger, all of the news that basically happened after the interviews with Vince himself, all of that big news that happened after they had recorded all their interviews with Vince. That's sort of gone over quickly in the first 5 minutes or so of the first episode. And then we go into a chronological view of Vince McMahon's life and career, starting with his childhood and advancing onward. There is some coverage in the middle range of the series about the 1992 lawsuits, and we do get archival footage from Tom Cole and Rita Chatterton. There's clips, we're told, from the Phil Donahue show and all that stuff of that era of 1992. And then
and spoke to Phil Mushnick as well. So that's new interview. As he was one of the lead, he was a columnist, but still someone that was heavily covering those scandals.
And he was someone that Vince McMahon was talking about on Live Wire and things like that, shooting.
Oh, he became the go-to target for WWF against any criticism. It was like Phil Mushnick was their targeted, critic out there.
In the PTC era too, right? Parents Television Council in the 90s when they were pushing back against, how vulgar and violent, WF was becoming. But in the sixth last episode, there is, I was told that there is a focus on the Grant story, on the allegations of sexual misconduct that end up causing Vince to resign once and then twice. So that is covered. We'll see if it's covered up to the standard of the given viewer. That remains to be seen.
My assumption is that if you're going into this with a complete dismissal of Netflix doing any kind of a thorough job, I think you'll be surprised at them going further. I think if you're someone that's expecting like a real deep, deep look, and I think that there will still be a lot of questions coming out of this that are not going to satisfy an audience that wants to hear from, get some kind of a response from Vince McMahon or anything like that. That's not going to happen in this, but I would state
all these interviews are pre Wall Street Journal stories breaking.
That's right. Vince did not cooperate after the lawsuit was filed. So the multiple interviews they did up until that point predated the lawsuit from Janelle Grant. But again, Brandon and I have not seen the six episodes, so I'm going into it with an open mind, and we'll note here that the episodes are all dropping on a Wednesday, and because it's going to be very difficult for either of us to see any of the episodes before our usual start time, we're going to postpone our show till Thursday that week on September 26th, and therefore, Brandon and I will at least get to watch episodes 1 and 6. That is probably going to have the lion's share of the Janelle Grant involvement, and whatever we do get to see, we'll spend most of the show on the Thursday talking about the series, as I imagine that's going to be top of mind for our audience for the Thursday. So that week we'll be on one day later and chatting about the Mr. McMahon series.
There's no way to watch a Netflix show on like 1.5 speed, is there?
Yeah, there is.
I was going to say, you would know, I think.
Oh, listen, okay.
So I need like a Chrome extension or something?
You do, yes. Okay. The great John Cena changing my life forever about 2 years ago. We will all help out.
That'll work for Raw when it's on Netflix, maybe too.
Oh, it better be. I would not be continuing to cover Raw if that was not the case. So yeah. And I got to deal everything on Netflix up here in Canada. So yeah, absolutely. So there you go. That's the latest on the McMahon series.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Now we move on to a story that got way more attention than I assumed it would. But man, when you put Cody Rhodes in the line of a legal threat, boy, we got the Venn diagram this past week of the pro wrestling audience, the punk audience, and an amazing amount of crossover for this. And this all centers around the rights to the American Nightmare trademark, because Wes Eisold of the group American Nightmare and Cold Cave has filed a lawsuit against Cody Rhodes, against WWE and Fanatics over the trademark that Cody Rhodes had first filed for years ago. And when Eisold learned about this, he opposed the trademark, and it led to several years of contention before an agreement was reached in 2021. And they were very specific. Cody Rhodes could use the trademark for pro wrestling related activities, but with the stipulation that his imagery and name had to be 75% larger than the American Nightmare text on these items. And I guess things were going okay. 2022 hits, the WWE marketing machine gets behind the American Nightmare, and this blows up. And Eisold had apparently sent several warnings to Fanatics and Cody Rhodes about this issue, and it led to a lawsuit after he did not get what he deemed to be a suitable response to the matter, and now he is seeking damages over this. I think I recapped that okay, as I don't have the story right in front of me.
So the settlement that they agreed to, that happened in 2021 when Cody was wrestling for AEW, and in fact, in at least one instance, AEW is mentioned in the settlement. So Cody paid Eisold $30,000, and they agreed that anytime you sell merchandise that's Cody Rhodes merchandise, and if you're going to use the American Nightmare text, it's got to be, I want to pull up the actual language, but it's got to be you have to have Cody's image, his name, or some other likeness, or some other wrestling imagery that's 75% larger, I believe is the wording, than the American Nightmare text. Basically, to make it clear to anybody who's looking at a shirt or buying a shirt, to make it absolutely clear that when they look at a shirt that has American Nightmare on it, that they're looking at a Cody Rhodes wrestling shirt and not a American Nightmare, the punk rock band shirt. And in this complaint, Wesley Eisold, his lawyers point out a number of examples on social media where people are sharing images of themselves wearing an American Nightmare shirt. They're wearing a Cody Rhodes American Nightmare shirt, and they're tagging the band's social media accounts to basically say, this is evidence. Look, this is creating confusion in the marketplace. And I'm sure his point of view is that, look, he's selling shirts so that people can represent my band. And it's Cody Rhodes and WWE who's benefiting from that, and Fanatics, who's also a named defendant here, rather than me. And the reason why this is happening is because you're not upholding the terms that we agreed to in our settlement. So that's what's happening there. And it's on its face. We'll see what the defendants respond with. But on its face, it does seem to be that he has a fairly strong argument that if you look at the merchandise, including as of this past weekend, when I was looking at W Shop, which is a Fanatic store, it does look like some of the items there do not meet the terms of their 2021 settlement.
Yeah. I mean, without being able to see the actual agreement that was reached in 2021, if what Isold is conveying is accurate, then he absolutely has a case here. An agreement was made and the agreement is being violated. I compared this to the World Wildlife Fund, where it's not as though this just creeped up. WWF in 1994 sat down, they made an agreement, and in time they violated the agreement and a judge ruled in favor of the World Wildlife Fund. So we will see if this gets there. It's worth noting, Isold is not looking for some insane amount of damages in all of this. I imagine that this is going to be settled with something amicable for both parties, because I do not see WWE just giving up this very valuable trademark to them. But I see them, perhaps so, this is just a case of updating this agreement so that is to both sides' approval.
So we can look read directly from the settlement, which is an exhibit in the lawsuit. So it's public, it's viewable for the world here. And it says, Isold further agrees to Runnels' use, but not registration of the mark, et cetera, et cetera. The part that I want to read here, though, is that, okay, he can't use this in connection with, he can use this in connection with websites, e-commerce pages, social media, advertisements, and other outlets used to almost contain, blah, 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 to appear in reasonably placed and sized prominence as compared with the Runnels mark that is 75% larger size as compared to the Runnels mark. And that must be his name and likeness, or substantial indicia indicating association with wrestling. For example, the AEW company logo, which was the company that he was working for at the time. I suppose, as a stand in here, WWE would replace that. 75% or larger in size must be Cody Rhodes, the name in text, his name and likeness. So that would be like his face, his body, which there are like shirts with him in his gear and everything, or just some other wrestling imagery, like a ring or something like that. So I think it makes it fairly clear, but we'll see what the defendants have to say.
Yes. And I would love to hear from Wes Isold as well. Open invite if he would like to drop by Pollock and Thurston. Always happy to speak to people who's figured prominently into the news cycle. Let's continue onward. And do you want to just briefly recap what happened last week involving Dr. Carlin Kolker and withdrawing his petition and what this means for?
He suddenly dropped his lawsuit. So people need to know there are two simultaneous lawsuits between Janelle Grant and Dr. Carlin Kolker. First, well, I don't know if it's exactly correct to call them lawsuits. In any case, there's two sets of litigation. There's two legal cases. First, as we reported and have been talking about since, I believe, July, Janelle Grant filed a petition against Carlin Kolker, doctor from the Peak Wellness Clinic, saying that she was being given supplements, these pills, and being given IV infusions, and she wasn't even told what she was getting. She wants her medical records. She's maybe gotten some, but they're not everything that she wants. And she wants that and more evidence from Dr. Kolker to support her federal lawsuit against WWE Vince McMahon, John Laurinaitis. Okay, she's doing that. And then a couple weeks later, Dr. Kolker came back and filed his own petition against Grant. So that created two separate cases, and he was seeking depositions and all sorts of evidence appearing to begin to mount a case for defamation. But suddenly, and without any further explanation, though we do have a comment from Ann Callis. I don't know if you have that ready. I can try to find it if not. But we reached out to his lawyers, Dr. Kolker's lawyers, who did not provide a comment. It doesn't appear that there's a settlement here. We wouldn't necessarily know that, but we just sort of don't know what the story is here, why he suddenly decided to drop his case. The Grant case against him still happening, though.
Ann Callis gave the following comment to Post Wrestling. Quote, unsurprisingly, Dr. Kolker has withdrawn his baseless motion. In the same vein as Mr. McMahon's recently struck down motion, this was filed simply as yet another frivolous attempt to intimidate Ms. Grant. Ms. Grant remains steadfast in her right to seeking documents and information relating to her own medical records, metadata, Dr. Kolker's prescribed treatments, and any communications between Dr. Kolker and other parties concerning Ms. Grant and Ms. Grant's medical treatment. So pretty,
I was really surprised to, yeah.
And it's not often you get such a just about face and just completely dropping this.
And that's certainly not a comment from Ann Callis. That's like, you know, we've settled and we've come to some amicable agreement here. She's, it's sort of a verbal attack on him. So it's not like it doesn't appear that they've come to some sort of settlement. And we're really lacking an explanation and what pressured them to end up dropping this case. I don't know.
All right. We have more local authorities that are trying to land WWE premium live events. We now go to a group called Sports Milwaukee. And this was reported earlier this week through the Milwaukee Business Journal that Sports Milwaukee is preparing a bid for next year's Money in the Bank event. Very disappointed that we didn't get more pun-related headlines in regards to the story with WWE seeking local funding for Money in the Bank. But nonetheless, they are putting together a bid, and maybe the most the biggest avenue to grab these live events, you get your local mayor to be involved. And Mayor Cavalier Johnson told the Business Journal that he's a, quote, huge WWE fan, and the city has been in talks with the company about Milwaukee hosting a large scale event. So this is continuing in the pattern of WWE seeking funding for the right for your venue to have a premium live event on its own.
It was in Toronto this year. There was some marketing on the light poles and stuff like that, which might be a hint that there was cooperation with the local government. I've looked into the Sports Milwaukee, and it's what comes up when you Google Sports Milwaukee is Visit Milwaukee, which is a .org, which means private company, which means maybe not so subject to records requests. But if there's any way to find out, we will. We don't have an example, as far as I know, of Money in the Bank attracting a site fee. Milwaukee's domestic, so that probably takes it down from being in the 1 to 2 million range of the events that were in Puerto Rico and the Cardiff event, which were both 1.5 million and what I think 2.8 million, something like that, respectively. But maybe this is more along the lines of a few hundred thousand dollars, which is what we've seen for SummerSlam and for Royal Rumble. And that sort of, I say that because that sort of adds up with the, you know, the prestige of Money in the Bank. It's below Royal Rumble. It's below SummerSlam. So maybe a couple hundred thousand dollars they might be able to extract from these sports commissions or whatever would be at the tourism board.
We also had this past Friday, the final edition of SmackDown airing on Fox. And this was opposite a 3.5 hour block by AEW on TNT. And the numbers were, I mean, really by both standards, dramatically down. We had the second lowest SmackDown ever on Fox behind a best of show from last December, while the AEW block saw Collision hit a 0.04 in the demo from 8 till 10 and 157,000 viewers, followed by the 1 hour of Rampage that at least jumped up to a 0.08 in the demo and 233,000 viewers. This going against the NFL game on Peacock from Brazil, U.S. Open tennis. I think there was a WNBA game on top of that. So it was a very competitive night, but it is an interesting look at AEW and its audience and how much of it is baked into an audience that how much of AEW is drawing from its specific fan base versus an audience that when presented in a head-to-head format, WWE is the priority for a lot of people. This was kind of eye-opening a generation ago when TNA tried this on a Monday night and they just got slaughtered going against Raw. And it was kind of this indication that it is the number two choice behind a WWE product. I mean, am I reading too much into this? Because there was a time that I think an AEW programming block, even against a Fox broadcast of SmackDown, is retaining a larger number.
Rampage and SmackDown went head-to-head when SmackDown was on FS1. And
that thing was like we had this neck-and-neck 30-minute head-to-head period between the two. There would be no prayer of that today, even for an FS1 broadcast.
Now, this was going against a SmackDown on Fox, against an NFL game on Peacock. SmackDown did its lowest rating ever, too. Like, SmackDown did not do great on this night either.
No, it was hurt as well.
SmackDown, I believe, did. If you discount that December 29th episode, which was just a best of largely rerun content, this was the lowest rating for any SmackDown episode on Fox. Of course, that's by definition excluding the FS1 preemptions. So they did not go out with a bang in terms of their TV rating here. But they were probably affected by the NFL game that was on Peacock and maybe the other competition as well. This was the lowest collision, bar none. It was in a preemption. It was outside of its normal slot, going against another wrestling show, going against an NFL game. So it's not that surprising when you take those things into account.
There's a lot of caveats to add to it, but I think it also is an indication too of the shifting audience of AEW as well. And we will see what the bounce back is, because they are returning to Saturday this week. Although it is a tape show, they are doing tonight in Lexington, Kentucky, and tomorrow they're in Toledo, Ohio to tape Collision several days in advance. This Saturday, Noche UFC at the Sphere. Do you have any curiosity to at least watch like a clip of this to see what this
looks
like?
I'm curious to see what it's going to look like. Yeah, for sure.
I think that's everyone's curiosity, even if you're not that engaged with the fights, which the top three fights are actually very good fights. It's not the most dynamic card in the world, but the Sphere is the draw on this show. I don't know if that's enough that people are going to spend $80 on a pay-per-view for, but they have made the Sphere the star of this show, and this has been by far the most expensively produced show in company history. At the latest figure thrown out by Dana White was $20 million. Yes. They are expecting in the neighborhood of a $21 million gate. However, there is also a sponsorship from Riyadh Season that could be.
Do we know what that is?
We don't know what the figure is. I don't know what the public records requests are like in Riyadh, but
I don't think there's very strong public records law in Saudi Arabia.
You have the ESPN licensing fee that you get for each pay-per-view. There's the regular sponsorships. This is going to be a very profitable show for the company. Will it be as profitable as originally thought when these tickets were priced so much? This has been a super expensive show, and it sounds like the cost just escalated and escalated. And the consistent talking point from Mark Shapiro to Dana White and executives in between, this is one and done. We are not doing this again. And I mean, time will tell. I think this is going to be a really well-produced show, but this is really not in the TKO wheelhouse of getting the most by spending the least. This is getting a lot, but also spending a ton to do so.
I would think whatever they're getting from the Saudi government, isn't that largely offsetting the albeit enormous cost that I totally believe is happening here? But, you know, when it comes to Saudi government sponsorship fees, those tend to be pretty high as well.
Yeah, as I said, this is going to be a very, they're not losing money on this show. I guess you're just looking at the margins for a company that is still running the apex because it keeps costs so low when they could fill a lot of buildings just because of the brand is exceptionally hot. You could go to a lot of markets and sell 8,000 to 10,000 tickets, but they are still remaining in the apex. I think they like the idea of making these guaranteed revenue streams while keeping costs exceptionally low. So this is an outlier.
It seems like ticket sales are doing okay, right? Well over 10,000, 11,000, something like that.
It's over 13. Like this is going to be, and they're at the largest scale ever. Like again, it's going to be a giant gate figure that I don't know if the UFC will hit. Like their previous high was $7.7 million. They're going to top over $20 million for this gate. It's an enormous amount that they are taking in.
$17.7
million. Comfortably above that. And it's going head to head with a Canelo fight in Las Vegas as well. So there's a lot of competition for just combat sports on Saturday.
Yes. I saw our friends at Lightshed were doing some WrestleTix like work on the Sphere ticket map for this. And
did they bring up WrestleTix?
No, but they did appear to analyze it on their own though. But they were not too impressed with the ticket sales.
All right. Well, there you go. That's coming up this Saturday for those that are interested in watching the Sphere show. I am curious to see if it's enough that people will actually buy the pay-per-view and what the experience would be like in person versus on pay-per-view, because that's the Sphere is built for in-person entertainment, but how they translate that, we will see. But this has been Dana White's baby all year long, so we will see how it comes out.
Yeah, speaking of which, we're going head-to-head with Mark Shapiro at Goldman Sachs right now.
Oh, that's right. Yes, we will have to check in. With rumors of a new AEW show or potentially more hours, should dilution be a concern for a long-term view? The way he capitalized that, I thought maybe that would be the spinoff show's name. But
AEW dilution.
I mean, that's the ongoing question of whatever company we're talking about, from UFC to WWE, is you're being paid so much for content, but is there a you're putting out so much content that it does wear on your audience and it does erode that fan base that gets out of the habit of watching Raw every Monday night. I think we're already there with AEW. I think the introduction of Collision has had not a giant impact on Dynamite, but some impact on the fact that it is AEW. When it started, it was a very digestible 2 hours a week that they were asking of your time, and you could be up on everything that's happening in the company in those 2 hours. Dark was not mandatory viewing. Dark Elevation was not mandatory viewing. You got 2 hours a week and you had a pay-per-view quarterly. And now, if you want to be up on everything, which a lot of wrestling fans, they are those that want to be able to stay up on everything, it's 5 hours a week. It's pay-per-views almost every month. And it's just a lot when many of them are watching other pro wrestling and you're going to be picking and choosing what you watch on a weekly basis. And when you fall out of that habit, it does become a chore to get those people back into the habit of watching your weekly programming. But it's a very profitable area of business to churn out more.
So they're currently at 5 weekly hours, AEW is. If they added a new show, perhaps called AEW Shockwave, that would bring them to 6. Compare that to WWE is doing 7 weekly hours of, and that's not even including things like Main Event or anything like that. And this is not including Ring of Honor, I suppose, on the AEW side either. I don't know. I guess like, how much of a difference is it versus comparing it to like, yeah, well, no one's watching every NFL game that run concurrently in a lot of cases. You don't need to watch every NFL game to keep up on what's happening in the NFL. Maybe that's where highlight shows come in and you just don't have something as analogous to that in wrestling.
Let's go to one more here from Mitch. With the increase of blood spilled weekly / blood being consumed orally in AEW, 3 feuds now, will you commit as adult journalists? What are the alternative? How many children are covering pro wrestling?
At least one recently.
That's right. That's right. To seek answers as to what health and safety protocols, including blood testing, is taking place. The always positive MJ, who I'm sure we'll see a tweet storm of whatever you choose to answer here. Yes, yes, MJ, we will absolutely get to the bottom of any potential crises.
There are some states like Virginia, I think, that require you to take an HIV test, for what that's worth.
Where was the pay-per-view? Illinois. Does Illinois require any?
No, there's no commission whatsoever in Illinois. No.
Okay. You don't have to do any like cinder block tests ahead of time, or you have to take a breathing test to see how long you can be in a plastic bag.
It's complete wrestling anarchy in Illinois. Yeah.
That's it. All right. Well, there you go. Pretty much up to date on everything. We are going to sign off, but I will be back tonight with Wei Ting to chat about Dynamite, which is taking place from Lexington, Kentucky, the Rupp Arena, which is a giant arena, a very, very big venue that they are running tonight following All Out. And then coming up this week, patreon.com/WrestleNomics. You can go check out Brandon with whatever else is breaking. He will be live at 11 a.m. Eastern time this coming Sunday.
I have one more thing to add. is that.
Oh, that's right. That's right. We have a late breaking story that.
So as a result of some, this is a minor, maybe it's going to happen thing, but as a result of a response to a records request from the city of Arlington, we do have an email where we have a an AEW employee, asking, for July 8th to July 14th, 2025 to be put a hold on the esports stadium. So presumably, and there's no response to this in the set of records that I have. So maybe it's not going to happen. Maybe it was addressed outside of email. But it does look like there is at least interest in returning to esports stadium for another residency next year around the same time. And this would encompass the July 12th all in event, at Globe Life Field, right?
That's right. July 11th will be Globe Life Field.
And again, this time range is July 8th to 14th.
Did you view overall, like the residency as a, but overall, like positive running the same market each week? It was a smaller location, but the atmosphere to me was not a, I would say I thought the atmosphere was more of a positive than some of these other places where it's large buildings that are filled with 2,000 to 3,000 people. And it has more of a cavernous feel to it that they did get away from at the esports stadium.
Yeah, it's probably worth it in terms of raising AEW's attendance averages. No. How much does that matter? Very, very little. But it's probably not only their savings expense and therefore getting closer, a little closer to profitability by doing it, but it's probably also a strategic advantage. I mean, it's probably not a coincidence that I imagine it contributed to, you know, they did this with the local government in Arlington. They ended up announcing Globe Life Field as a venue. It doesn't appear that there's any sort of deal, a site fee or anything like that, that I could dig up here. But it apparently helped their relationships, at least to make that event, all in next year happen. So it's probably not only financially favorable to them. It might be a very small marketing PR cost in terms of like, you know, we've got lower numbers and how does it look on TV? Is it that bad? It doesn't seem like it. So it's, I would say, an easy net positive.
All right. That's going to wrap it up for us, everyone. Thanks again. If you want to support us, patreon.com/WrestleNomics and postwrestlingcafe.com is where you can check it out. Also, again, Brandon did a lot of great reporting over the past week. You can check out his work, postwrestling.com, WrestleNomics.com, for all the latest. And we will be back next Wednesday, same time start, 1 p.m. Eastern time. And that is all for us.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.